idam nityam anutishtanti manava shudhavanto nashuyanto muchyante te pikarmabhi. Those persons who execute their duties according to my injunctions and who follow this teaching faithfully without envy become free from the bondage of fruitive actions. Yetvetat abhyasuyanto nanu tishtanti me matam sarvajnana vimudham sthan vidinasthan achetasa. But those who out of envy disregard these teachings and do not follow them are to be considered bereft of all knowledge, befooled, and ruined in their endeavors for perfection. This sloka is from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, in which Lord Sri Krishna is explaining the path of perfection. To follow his teachings faithfully. Any endeavor in life, however materially successful we may be, is futile and void from the platform of reality unless it is in harmony with the will of God. Materialistic society that we are living in today has lost its connection with the great heritage that it was founded upon. The foundation of every civilization is spiritual culture, based on knowledge of the scriptures, humility before saintly persons, purity in life, and dedication to God. But somehow or other, society has become so misled by ignorance and infatuation that we consider progress to be technology. And we no longer concern ourselves with progress in morality and spiritual realization. Progress through technology can solve certain relative problems in life, but unless we have developed spiritual consciousness side by side, it only creates greater problems and greater sufferings. Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita are explained to be the Rajya Vidya, the highest knowledge, the king of knowledge. And when it is applied to any aspect of life, it brings about progress toward perfection through anything we do. But when it is neglected, as Krishna has explained, the result is we become further and further bewildered in our aim in life. Today, everyone is making so many grand plans for success and happiness, but they do not know what is happiness and what is success. His Srimad Bhagavatam explains, if you decorate a dead body with wonderful jewelry and fine clothes, what is the use? So similarly, without cultivation of spiritual life, people are spiritually dead. But they are decorating their materialistic conceptions with so many ornaments, but it brings them no real happiness. Ultimately, it brings them frustration. We have seen people who are fabulously wealthy, influential, but who have some disease, and they cannot enjoy any of their wealth, or some mental anxiety, aggravation. What is the use? So Krishna explains that all this plan making for our own personal interests, it is all a dream and is all an illusion. We should make plans to progress toward real happiness and toward reality and truth. He uses the example. There was a very poor man. He was a potter. Somehow or other, he acquired enough funds to make two clay pots. Took him great effort just to get enough resources to make these two clay pots. And he was thinking, this is the beginning of something great. And he began to just dream about what he was going to develop from this new enterprise of making pottery. I'll sell these two pots, I'll make a profit, I'll get more capital, I'll make 10 pots, 15 pots, 100 pots, 1,000 pots, million pots, soon I'll be distributing clay pots all over the world. I'll make so many franchises of other people selling clay pots, producing clay pots under my command. And then I will have a beautiful house, such a nice house, with so many rooms and so many servants, and I'll have nice fine clothes, and I'll have beautiful jewelry and nice car, and I'll get a beautiful wife, and I'll decorate her so nicely with so nice clothes, and she'll be so satisfied, and she'll be so submissive to me. And if she argues with me, I will kick her. And then he kicked, and as he kicked his two clay pots and broke them. And he was left with nothing. You laugh, but this is the story of material life. We make so many plans. We have so many dreams. But ultimately, in the form of time, they are all kicked and everything is lost. So we should understand how to make proper plans. We should plan our day, we should plan our life according to Krishna's teachings. Then our plans are always in contact with truth. And Krishna's teachings in Bhagavad Gita are very simple and very clear. That whatever we should do it as a service to the Supreme Lord. Whatever we should do it in a mood of devotion to the Supreme Lord. And we should maintain the standards of morality and sadhana that preserve and influence and increase higher and higher states of realization of our own soul. This body is a temporary vehicle in which the soul is residing. We should not live simply for the sake of making the vehicle a wonderful place. We should maintain the vehicle as nicely as possible according to necessity, but we should live for the person within the vehicle. We should see to the needs of the Atma or the soul. Every soul is searching, seeking, and longing for real pleasure and real loving relationship. And that is only possible in relationship to Krishna, to Bhagavan. And this is the point that makes human form of life different than all the lower species. The lower species are making, according to their capacity, grand arrangements for eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We have seen how the spider weaves his web. It's a grand arrangement. Amazing how the technology of a spider's web. And through that technology, he has a home to live. And through that technology, he getting so much food to eat. And he's very proud. Just see what I have done with my life. So much food. I have had so much sex life, and I have produced so many other little spiders. And they will also make nice webs, and they will also catch so many flies. And human civilization is no better. We're creating our nice webs in the form of our homes. We have our nice situations of livelihood to get nice food. We create some children. We leave them an inheritance by which they can have a nice web also. But human life is meant to realize the sublime principle of spiritual consciousness that is within us all. Human life is meant to transcend relativity and enter into eternity. Not after death, but in this life. Eternity is something that is always existing. It is existing within us at this moment. It always has, and it always will. But we have lost touch with our eternal nature because we are making so many plans. Like the potter, so many dreams. Sometimes we have some capacity to carry out our dreams, and sometimes they remain dreams. But in either case, all our dreams are kicked to pieces like the pots, and we're left with nothing, either at the time of death or before. So we should be intelligent. Intelligence doesn't mean how much money you can make. Intelligence doesn't mean how many people you can sell something to, how many people you can convince. Intelligence doesn't mean getting good grades on exams. Intelligence means living according to the truth, living according to what is real, making tangible progress toward the eternal principle of God consciousness. And Lord Sri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita has explained, Chaturvarna maya sristam guna karma nivagisha, that he has arranged society in four varnas and four ashrams in such a way that everyone progresses toward real goal of life. Aham bija pratapita. Krishna says he is the father of everyone. A good loving father wants to give the best to his son. Like today in society, a good father wants to give the best food, the best clothes, the best education, the best inheritance by which he can have a life, the best wife, the best everything you want to arrange for your son. Krishna is the Supreme Father. He is the eternal father of every soul. And he has spoken the Gita to give us the very best thing a father could possibly want to give his children. The path and the means by which we can achieve eternal happiness in spiritual consciousness. Our Father, Eternal Father, has left the Bhagavad Gita behind out of his supreme love and concern for all of us. And if a son in this world or a daughter rejects the loving concern of a good father or mother, that person will be lost. So we must understand this principle, that Krishna has divided the society into these four varnas and four ashrams so that everyone in this human form of life can achieve the greatest, greatest benefits. In the Brahmachari ashram, one is trained as a student to understand Brahman. What is spirit and what is matter? How to live according to the principle of spirit and how to utilize matter in relationship to that purpose. And this is called Yukta Vairagya. It is a principle that should be applied to every aspect of our life. Our Guru Maharaj used to say that we will accept anything if it can be used in Krishna's service. We will not reject that which is material if it can be used for a spiritual purpose. Just like this microphone, we are using it to discuss the sacred and holy teachings of Gita for the ultimate welfare of all living beings. Personally, I have nothing to offer you that can be of any real good to you. Personally, you have nothing really to offer anyone else that's of any real good to them. We have to humble ourselves to understand this. But God, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, He has given us the greatest treasure which will benefit everyone. And if we repeat those words and live according to those principles and utilize material facilities for that purpose, then through us, the Supreme Absolute Truth, Sri Krishna, can bring the greatest benefits and the greatest love to others. So because we are speaking Krishna's words through this microphone is being used for pure spiritual purposes and it is spiritualized. Whereas if we're using this microphone for political speeches or to sing various songs about love affairs between men and women of this world, then the purpose of this microphone is defeated. It is simply being utilized as another aspect which is creating material illusion and bondage. And this holds true for everything. The car that we drive, what are we using it for? The house that we live in, are we making it a temple, or are we just using it like the nest of an animal to eat, sleep, mate, and defend? The tongue which God has given us, are we speaking beneficially spiritual subjects with all honesty, or are we simply speaking to gain some material assets? Everything within this creation has a spiritual purpose. And spiritual science of Varnashram Dharma is to understand how everyone can utilize everything in this world that we have for a spiritual purpose. Mr. Chopra, he lives in this building, and in this building there is this nice terrace, and he is actually giving a wonderful example to everyone. Let us use this terrace for a spiritual purpose so that we can share enlightening words and enrich our lives. And there are nice lights to create a wonderful atmosphere, a nice sound system. There will be nice prasad, musical instruments, singing, dancing. All of these objects which are being used throughout the world are being spiritualized by His noble purpose. And it is this type of example which is most necessary in today's society. This is the only real valuable thing you can give your children, is inspiration for a spiritual life. As we said, material acquisition doesn't bring peace. It brings a sense of higher levels of material pleasure, but along with it come so many anxieties. And all of you have personal experience of this. Is this what we want to give our children? Some grand, wonderful material facility and a heart and mind full of anxieties, loneliness, and frustration? Or do we want to give them something wonderful? Connection to the eternal truth, to Krishna. That is real charity. That is real love. That is the purpose that Krishna has made us in this world for. In the Grihastha ashram, when a man and woman get married, they have two choices: to be like the cats and dogs, or to live according to the principles of those great saintly persons who have tread the Grihastha ashram in the past. Like Arjuna. Arjuna was a married man. He had children. He raised his children. He cared for his wife. And he performed his duty in perfect harmony with the will of God, under the guidance of his spiritual master, who happened to directly be Krishna at the time. In this way, he utilized his bow, his arrow, his chariot, his palace, his everything for God's service. And after he was victorious, along with his brothers Yudhisthira, Bhima, Nakula, Sahadev, they conquered the whole world. They had fabulous, fabulous treasures. They gave it all over to the son, Parikshit, and they decided to go into the Himalayas just to set an example that despite having so much wealth and so much wonderful, after they performed their necessary duty, they wanted to show the world that our real attachment is only to Krishna. It is only to God. All of these things that people are so much attached to, we accepted them all, we worked from them all, but we used them for a purpose of God's service. And when somebody else now could fulfill that purpose, we have no attachment. We are only attached to the service. That is Grihastha. That is what Gita teaches. Do not be attached to the facilities. Utilize them with an attachment to the Master, to God, to Krishna, for his pleasure. That is a life of liberation and freedom. So when a man and woman get married, according to the Vedic culture, according to the heritage of this great land of India, which is purely spiritual, in fact, according to every tradition of every civilized society, marriages take place either in the churches, the synagogues, the mosques, or the temples, or the mandirs. Because marriage is a sacred vow of dedication of oneself in the service of God, to live according to the highest and holiest principles, and to come together only for the purpose of spiritual purification and assisting one another in that process, which is a real exchange of love. But today, people have become so, we may say, secular in terms of marriage, that whether we go to a church or whether the Brahmins perform puja, it is all just a formality. It is all a ritual. People have no conception of even what's going on. Marriage is not only for the people who are getting married, but for all the guests. They should be spiritually inspired and enlivened to understand what is marriage. And every marriage, when we see these things, we should be enlivened and determined to increase our own vows to God. But these days, we have seen some pujas going on. Generally, the couple doesn't know what's happening. Everyone around are just talking, all gossip. They don't even pay attention, hardly. This is, to some extent, the best you can get in the ordinary society. It is very sad. The whole purpose and point is being forgotten. And this holds true in every religion, in every society. Every aspect of life is meant to bring us closer to God. So, when a man and woman come together, they should actually have the highest purpose in their relationship. They should take vows of spiritual purification, which is the vows that everyone takes at marriage, whether they know it or not. The mantras that are being chanted are that you are taking vows to live your life in dedication to God for spiritual purification. But usually the Brahmins do not even translate it, so you don't even know what you've done. But that's what marriage means. Total dedication of solemnizing your relationship in the service of God. And then there can be real happiness. There can be real purpose. And Arjuna and the Pandavas, they exemplified like this. And similarly, there are many people even amongst us tonight who are showing practically within this day and age, within society, how to live according to the sacred principle of devotion to God in whatever ashram, whatever walk of life we may be in. Krishna consciousness means to utilize our energies, our facilities, our everything to improve the quality of our life and to help others to improve the quality of their life. And what is life? Life is, as we know it, the difference between a dead body and a living body. That is life. When the body is dead, we say there is no life. When the body is living, we say there is life. So what is life? Life is consciousness. Life is the symptom of the soul. Increasing the value of life means increasing the condition of our consciousness. Increasing the liberating condition of our soul. That is life. So we are very, very happy to be here tonight with all of you to share these most essential and important messages of the Bhagavad Gita. Sudama Vipra was a wonderful example. He was a very poor man. So poor that he was so lean and thin, he had practically no food to eat, nor did he have anything of any substance to offer to his family. But he was content. He was content because of his inner realization, because of his love for God. But his wife, she was also a great devotee of God. And she wanted to see that he had basic necessities taken care of, which is natural, it is normal. So she asked him, you go to Krishna in Dwaraka. He's a very rich man. He's the husband of the goddess of fortune. He is God. And you are old friends with him. You went to school together. He can give you so much. Then we could live a more comfortable life in God consciousness. So Sudama said, how can I go to see Krishna without offering him something, some offering of love? So she went and she somehow obtained some old bits of chipped rice, chira. And he wrapped it in some cloth and went to Krishna in Dwaraka. And Krishna, who loves his devotee so much, personally sat him on his own seat and washed his feet. The Lord washed the feet of his devotee and massaged his legs, knowing he had taken a long journey. This is the love of the Lord for his devotee. And the goddess of fortune herself, Lakshmi Devi, the queen of Vaikuntha, was personally fanning him with chamara fan, although he was wearing very simple torn clothes. And Krishna forcibly knew he had that chipped rice, and he took it. And after taking one morsel, he was very satisfied. Sudama Vipra left Krishna after offering his love and went back. And where was once his simple abode, where he lived in great poverty, there was a grand palace, more decorated and ornamental than that of Indra in Swargaloka. And he was wondering, where am I? Have I taken the right path? I thought this was where my house is, but I'm lost. I don't understand. He was bewildered, confused. But then his wife came out, and she was beautifully decorated with all sorts of fine ornamentation and dresses. And there were so many maidservants around her, also decorated very beautifully. And when he saw her, he understood that this was Krishna. I didn't ask him for anything, but he's given so much. And when his wife looked at him, she understood that what Krishna has done for us. And they were both weeping and crying. They could not even speak to one another. They were so choked up in love for Krishna. And they walked together through the beautiful, beautiful parks that had all auspicious trees. Previously, it was like a desert. Beautiful swans and lakes and flowers. And they entered into the beautiful palace where there was wonderful furniture and beds, lamps. Sudama accepted all these facilities, but it is explained that he had the same consciousness as he did when he was living as a simple beggar. That whatever I have, whether it is a little or a lot, it will be used in the service of God. It will be used in detachment from me being the enjoyer and attachment to utilizing it for the best work of the world in God's service. So this is the standard of life that we should be aspiring for. This inner dignity by which we are so full, so enriched, so satisfied, that whether we have everything or nothing, we are content to utilize it for Krishna. Apuryamanam achala pratishtam. The Bhagavad Gita explains that those who are of Krishna consciousness, who practice true Sanatana Dharma, their inner happiness is like an ocean. It is like a great reservoir of water. It is always full. Whatever comes or goes through our mind and senses, whether it be our health, whether it be our wealth, whether it be our very life, we deal with it according to the necessity, for the right motive, but it really doesn't faze us because we are so enriched with something so deep, and that is the pleasure of spiritual life, of devotion to Krishna. So let us all strive for this perfection. And Krishna explains it is very simple. To bring our consciousness to this original natural state comes about by first associating with those compassionate souls who are living according to this principle, by making deep friendships with those devotees who, like us, are striving to achieve these noble spiritual goals, and by following the principles of morality, especially no illicit sex, no taking of intoxications, no gambling, no eating of meat, And by hearing the glories of the Lord, by reading Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, by hearing the pravachan of saintly devotees, and by chanting God's names. The chanting of Krishna's names is the greatest benediction upon all humanity. Cheto darapana marajanam bhava mahadavagni nirvapanam Sreya kairava chandrakavataranam vidyavadhu jivanam Anandam budivaratanam pratipatam punamritashvadanam Sarvatmasna paramparam vijayate Sri Krishna sankirtanam. Because through chanting Krishna's names, which is the most sublime, purest of all forms of meditation or religious activity, in this age of Kali, we cleanse our mind of all misconceptions, of all material inebrieties. We bring our mind and our heart back to its pure state of spiritual bliss. Therefore, this chanting of the holy name brings about the greatest victory in our life. Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. The greatest victory means victory over ignorance and victory over death and victory over suffering. And that can only be done through sincerely and attentively chanting the holy name of the Lord. Harinama, 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 eva kevalam, kalo nasteva, 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 gatiranyata. So we should take very seriously this great gift that Krishna has given us, the teachings of the Gita, the life that we can live through these teachings, the association of sadhus, and the regular chanting of Krishna's holy name. Is there any questions? What? What is meant by Dan and Kanya Dan? You're asking what that means? It is obvious what it means. But Krishna... Huh? Krishna explains in the Gita that there are three types of charity. Dan means charity. Whether you're giving your kanya or you're giving anything, still it's dan, it's charity. So there, whatever you're giving, kanya dan, dan, bhog dan, whatever, there's three types of dan. Charity in the mode of goodness, charity in the mode of passion, and charity in the mode of ignorance. Krishna says charity that is given to the wrong person at the wrong time, given the wrong thing in the wrong place, is called charity in the mode of ignorance. Charity that is given perhaps to the right person at the right place, at the right place, at the right time, with material desires, with desire for fruitive results, is charity in the mode of passion. Charity given to the right person, the right thing, in the right place, at the right time, with no selfish motivation, is charity in the mode of goodness. Now Krishna explains, things done that in the mode of ignorance creates bondage, illusion, and suffering. Things done in the mode of passion creates great, great longing and attachment, which also is a form of suffering. Things done in the mode of goodness creates peace, harmony, and some temporary sense of happiness. But then Krishna explains that dan, which is done in the service of God, in the name of God, is transcendental to the modes of material nature. And this is the principle that Krishna teaches. Traigunya vishaya veda nistraigunya bhavarjuna. To transcend these modes of material nature. So the greatest kanya dan, the greatest dan of any sort, is to understand Bhoktaram Jagatapasam Sarva Lokameheshwaram Suhridam Sarva Bhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Rachchati. That Krishna is the supreme proprietor of everything that exists, and that he is ultimately the enjoyer of all dan, of all sacrifices. And he is our best friend. And according to the proper, the higher scriptures, they explain that when you give your daughter to a husband, the consciousness should be that, my lord, it's not my daughter, it's your daughter. Everything is your property. You are the proprietor of everything. This daughter is the property of God, and it is my duty to raise that daughter in such a way according to God's desire. And I will give her at a certain time in her life to a man who will be her husband, and he will take that responsibility of protecting her on behalf of God. Huh? So you are entrusting your service to God to another person who is competent to carry on that service. Huh? That is the highest and purest conception that a father is meant to have during marriage. And that as a service to God, this couple is going to come together to do wonderful things. And this is my contribution to the Lord and to human society. Is that the way everyone thinks? Hopefully. Any other questions?